Hello, iGaming Intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsors. The iGaming Next podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. I've been working with Ashley, Lewis, and the guys over at Pragmatic Solutions over the last year. And as the early supporter of this podcast, I cannot recommend them enough. The Pragmatic Solutions Player Account Management Platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo.
Future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lindt.
Good afternoon, good morning, Michael. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on today. I mentioned this before here. I've been excited to do this podcast for the last couple of days together with you. And also something disclosing for my own end is I'm personally a shareholder of Catena Media, which makes this podcast even more interesting, of course, to dig into the numbers here and in regards to the quarterly report that was released today, and also the future of Catena Media. But I wanted to start to ask you, Michael, the Q2 21 report was released this morning. And I want to ask you, can you give your own brief summary on the report and how you see it?
Certainly. As I mostly said in my CEO comments and also on the call, I view Q2 as a strong quarter for us. It's a very hard comparable quarter for a couple of reasons. Compared to last year, while we were up 9% on revenue and all of that pretty much organic compared to last year, that's very significant considering last year, Q2, we were in the midst of a pandemic. So sports had dried up, so to speak, globally. But we also saw this massive casino surge in North America and elsewhere, which Catena Media being very heavily in casino, online casino affiliation, We saw a lot of uptick. It was our strongest quarter last year, which is not typical. And so this year, it will not be our strongest quarter, but it was still 9% stronger than in revenues than it was last year. So I view that as a very good indicator. I think there's disappointment potentially. It wasn't as strong as Q1. And that's, yes,
right.
Love to have a public company that just goes up every quarter. We are a business around some cycles of calendars, and the more we invest in North America, the more we become dependent to some degree on the North American sports betting affiliation calendar. That for the next few years will mean that that is mostly driven in the NFL season, which is September to February. So we're going to see highs and lows around that. If we announce today that 49% of our revenues are coming from North America, thus you have to expect that that has to have an impact on it. North America at some point will become more than just sport. It's already started some states doing casino, but for now, that's going to impact us. So we came down from Q1 to Q2 because of that sports cycle, and also Q1, because states want to launch while they're still in the NFL season, if they're launching sports. We had two very significant states, Michigan and Virginia, launch in Q1. Catena Media did a lot of work for a number of years to be ready for those launches. And guess what? We had a very successful launch on both those states. Now, the casino in Michigan was also launched in addition to sports, and it continued to do well in Q2. But there was essentially no sports in North America in Q2. So guess what? Those revenues come down in that cycle. What happens in the following months and quarters as NFL resumes? You could make some assumptions. But I thought it was a very successful quarter. Especially as us coming out of COVID, we've been working on transformation efforts in Europe. Europe has been under massive changes in the UK and Germany and Sweden with regulations. I finally feel that the UK in particular, we're starting to get a strong foothold with the operators around how that market works in the post-regulated environment. Regulations have relatively stabilized. So again, operators and ourselves can now work within that environment. and we're seeing good progress there. Italy, we've been doing well within its regulated constraints. There have been challenges, we've said, in Europe with our casino products, and we probably didn't invest enough in them and didn't diversify them enough in the same market. So we're doing that. Germany, everybody loves to talk about the disaster that is Germany right now for everybody. It has impacted us greatly. We are down, as we've said, 50% year over year in German revenues. It's now a very, really insignificant portion of our total portfolio, well under 10%. With the growth everywhere else, well, Germany hurts to have lost. It's now been known this was happening. We've planned our business. We're planning for a strong Germany in the future. Maybe it's not the Germany that was 2 years ago, maybe not for some time, but as a regulated market where Catena Media tends to be able to thrive, as we have in the regulated markets in North America, we expect Germany to grow now as the operators start to become comfortable with the marketing rules and the tax rates, and they start to make marketing investments, which includes working with affiliates. So there'll be some time to tell how fast Germany grows, but I think we are, as I said on the earnings call earlier today, I think we're at the bottom of that trough or pretty close to it, because the regulations have now gone into effect at the start of July. The new tax rates are in effect. Revenue share has been cut off. We're at the low point of sports in Europe because we're between Euro and Premier League, so there's no sport really going on in July and August. The holiday seasons are happening in Europe when casino is typically the slowest online in Europe. So with all those factors, that tells me that all the factors in Germany are probably at their lowest point that we're going to be at for the foreseeable future. Could I be wrong? Could there still be dark days ahead? Absolutely. But again, I think those dark days are a lot less significant to Catena Media in terms of the downside risk. There's just upside potential that I see as we go forward.
Right. This is an honest review of the quarter. Thank you for that, Michael. And you mentioned here the sentiment of the quarter being the year before being COVID doped, so to say, and as an effect of the pandemic that happened. And it's a sentiment I hear from a lot of operators and affiliates, the likes that are have been talking over the last 6 to 8 months, really, of this being a negative effect on Q2 onwards. However, Kindred just launched their quarterly report showing an 18% growth in their casino product. Can you talk a little bit more of, because you mentioned it throughout the report, a lot, the sentiment of the COVID doping. Can you talk a little bit more about how you see the this massive uptick last year in casino growth and why it is flat, let's say, in this quarter?
Okay.
Yep. What is the effect here? Yes.
So the casino growth last year was heavily weighted to North America, where they have the largest number of land-based casinos out there. There are about 900 right. North American land-based casinos that were essentially shuttered during this time in Q2 last year. There are some in the UK and other places, but a significant amount in North America where we were and are significantly strong in casino. So that spiked us up significantly. They're also, we're very strong there in the non-required regulated markets, which are social casino in North America and sweepstakes casinos, things that were still working in the states that didn't even have online casino to begin with yet. So we saw a massive uptick. This year, we saw growth in North America. We saw mostly overall flat, though, for the total casino picture year on year. And what we saw, the effect was in the COVID doping probably was negative on sports last year. And this year, it's the opposite effect with sports actually resuming in a calendar. We had the Euros, we had that increase into this year, which is probably really what contributed to that 9% revenue increase in the quarter. Other marketing, other operators, I can't speak for Kindred myself, but everyone has a different blend of how much casino, how much sport they are, and how much of the different markets they're in. And the more you're in North America, the different impact you'll feel than you might be if you were in the Nordics or in Germany more heavily.
Right. Let's stay on the U.S. Here for some time, because obviously you just reported that around 50% of your total group revenue derives from the U.S. now, which is a massive uptick from last year. I think it was 30%, and the year before that, something under 20%. So it's clearly US is your key market here. Do you expect in the future quarters that the revenue percentage will increase from the US, or is it too risky to rely on US to that extent?
So yes and yes. So I expect it to grow. Right. I don't know if we want to maximize the potential of the largest growing market in the world right now for sports betting affiliation and iGaming affiliation. We would be doing our investors such as yourself and myself and a disservice if we were not maximizing the North American opportunity. So we are absolutely going to do that. It is the most important market for us. But yes, there is risk in doing that too. And we are a global organization and working as hard as we can to maximize the global opportunity to keep balance in there. So will it go above that 49? I highly expect that with 5 more states about to come online, Ontario and Canada, and more announcing that they're coming soon. I just see no way that anywhere else can keep up with that type of population growth that we're seeing in available access to market of this industry. However, we are focusing heavily on our transformation efforts in Europe. We're going into the Netherlands as that launches in the October period or so. We are looking at additional countries that are out there that are talking about launching in Europe. We're looking at Africa. We're heavily investing in Latin America. We have sites running there. We have NDCs, new depositing customers coming from there. Much lower value today, but Brazil and others are markets that are expected to flourish in coming years. So we're building for that so we can have more of a balanced portfolio. Ideal to me would be Europe and the US, you know, come out to, let's say, 40% and 40% of the business, and the rest make up the rest for the next few years. I think the pendulum is going to swing to the US for now, and maybe we can get that to swing back with ourselves investing in Latin America, Asia Pacific, which I didn't mention. Japan's been very good for us. I've promoted some people on our internal teams to look more heavily at the APAC opportunity. Australia's been starting to do some things for us. So how else can we grow there? And that's got years ahead of it to work through the lack of regulation and security in some of those markets. But we're going to look at all of those. And how do we also broaden out? We have our financial trading group. What else can we be doing to balance out the risk? So that's the responsible thing to do.
Right. Diversification. In other words, it's been a key segment of the industry talking about diversifying revenue streams here, of course, especially considering the unexpected regulations that can come. That started off in Sweden, UK, and obviously Germany and so on. I want to ask you as well. You know the CEO of Evolution, Martin Carlesund. He said in an interview that he expects that the US market has the potential to become 20 times bigger than the European market. Is that a sentiment that you share?
You know, I am probably, and I think very highly of Evolution and the company, and it's a very smart organization. So, you know, not to counter anyone, I tend to be more of a pessimist sometimes when it comes to what's the total market potential, or at least what's the market potential that I should be talking about with the investors for what is on the near term, the 5 to 10 year radar. Having been in the US business for almost 20 years and globally probably for the last 15 or so, working with gaming products, land-based and online, the timing and the actual opportunity are always off in terms of expectations of analysts and whatever anyone's putting out there for total market access. So it always seems that they're going for the most optimistic and rosy and never quite reaches that in the time frame that is when someone thought it was going to get there. It's going to be a very large market. I think there's no doubt about that. I think in one of our slides, we show that, you know, we're at about 21% of the population now in North America has access to sports betting in their states. So that leaves a very large portion of the population. It's not 20 times, but it's still a very large number. Then you add to that what Evolution could also be referring to, in that on top of sports betting, all that same population even a smaller fraction of it has access to online casino. So, and that's a bigger business really when you get it to right. it at the end of the day. So there are multiple waves ahead in North America. So again, I think the pendulum does swing where it becomes a very large market in the future. 20 times, 10 times, all of those should be a worthwhile case for an investment scenario.
Absolutely. We'll see if Martin's predictions come to life here in the next decade. We can do another podcast then.
More than happy for him to be right.
Exactly. Yeah. Fingers crossed for that. Let's go back. You mentioned here, Michael, as well, a host of different emerging markets. I know that Catena Media focuses a lot on their efforts in Japan, for example. You mentioned Latin America. You mentioned Africa. There's so many emerging markets for the iGaming industry out there. And what I see in the industry is that certain operators focus more on some emerging markets than others. It seems to me that it's difficult to focus on all markets at the same time, especially, taking US as you can divide that into 50 different emerging markets in a way, right? So how do you pick which emerging markets you want to focus on? And also, can you give an idea of which emerging markets that you believe in the most? Take US out of the equation, of course. And is there any emerging market that you are kind of expecting not to focus that much on in the next coming years?
Sure, and it is very difficult. It's a nice difficulty to have, though, that there are so many opportunities out there that you do have to pick and choose your battles, so to speak, because your resources are always going to be more limited than the opportunity, it seems, at least in this space currently. So the way we look at that is we look at what is the opportunity in not just the near term, but what is the long term scenario look like for the development of those markets, and where are they in that life cycle, and are we in a position where we can do early incubation work, such as like we're doing in Latin America? Or is it further along where we'd really, in order to get into it now, we'd have to do some sort of M&A or investment that, and is that then there for the right use of capital on that location versus somewhere else? And what's the return on that investment? It's trying to use some data and some fundamentals behind it. But at the end of the day, it is making decisions, just like with states. You know, there are states, so many states launching, regardless of how fast we grow the team in North America and try to use external resources, et cetera, we have to make decisions. Where do we just use our national brands? And we might make these decisions other places. Where do we use our European brands versus where can we actually launch a German or a French brand or a Pennsylvania brand or a Arizona brand versus Connecticut? Because I'll tell you, definitely going to do an Arizona brand. Have already done it because Arizona was clear it was going to launch. It had a timeline. It had a large number of operators that were coming to market. It had a decent population size. Now, a state like Connecticut might be a different analysis. We have good, strong national presence there, but three operators, much smaller state, even with a high per capita. Maybe you have to decide, I can't focus on that if I want to do Arizona and be ready for New York. Still take business in Connecticut, but not in the same way you do in Arizona. And so we do that globally. I think that's also been on myself to expand our own management within the organization to be able to focus on more regions. We had our European division was really our international group. And so they were covering everything that essentially wasn't North America. We've made divisions now. Our Ask Gamblers product, which has been a very strong casino product for us, that's part of our global brands group. So taking some of the knowledge in that within that group and expanding to some of our other products that have global potential. But those get thought about in a different way than having a geographic product like our products in Germany or Italy or UK, which is now part of our EMEA group. But we then also now have an APAC group, which is Japan pretty much at this point, but people who are focused on what else should APAC be besides Japan. And then you've got Latin America still really works out of our EMEA group because it's still really early incubation, but those are ways for us to grow and be able to focus on more things. The best thing I can do is surround myself with really smart people who really understand the businesses that they're in, and those businesses can be global. I mean, we're running a company based in Malta, traded on the Swedish NASDAQ, and I'm based in Las Vegas, Nevada. So you can be global and do multiple things around the world in today's age, and it's actually easier in this online realm.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, you know, you've been CEO, Michael, for Catalania Audio for a couple of months, really. I mean, and you rightly mentioned, I mean, you're on the other side of the world on the headquarters, which is just next to me here, literally, wall to wall, I am with Catalania Media. How does that work out, this new remote first situation? We speak a lot to Fiona, your HR director, and, you know, she's a big proponent of the remote working and so on. How has this influenced your organization, the new situation that COVID brought?
I think, to be quite frank, I think COVID probably opened up the opportunity for me to be the CEO of Catena Media. I think COVID has changed a lot of our fundamental beliefs on what it means to be able to work remotely, and is remote work as successful as in-office work, and can hybrid models work? These are things that have been talked about, but really that A-B testing never happened until COVID happened, and so many companies and so many industries were forced to do some sort of hybrid or fully remote model. We'd been fully remote in North America since we started our North American division, but the rest of Catena Media was a blend. So this has opened up where we can do this blend. We have many offices around the world. We have many people in remote places. We do have Japan way off the time zone, even more so than I am from the headquarters. Yeah, it means some changes in lifestyle. So yes, do I start my days at 2 or 3 a.m. in order to have more time with the European organization? Yes. Then does that stretch into the afternoons where I get time with Japan and Europe, or Japan and North America? Yes. But that's the nature of a worldly business. And again, by building up my own team and having some people I really highly trust in the executive level and the management of the heads below that who are running the countries and the country managers, that allows us to be lots of places without, you know, the best thing you can do is hire the right people and make them as autonomous as possible and say, go and conquer your worlds. And so that's where I believe we have the ability to thrive globally and not have to be always micromanaging. And that's something you can't do remote and you shouldn't be doing even if you're in an office. So,
Right. I know that Fiona has talked a lot about this, your chief HR officer, that, you know, traditionally when you employ people, you have like a radius within your office of talent, right? And that radius is, let's say, you know, 20 kilometers or something like that. And that's a massive limit on the organization in comparison to now than what you have implemented, this remote working situation where you literally can pick and choose talent from all over the world, right? Like, rather than having this little radius, you're a specialized company and you offer specialized services in specialized markets. And that must be a massive advantage at the end of the day, but also challenging, of course. We are all new to this at the end of the day. What would you say is the biggest challenge here for you so far in the remote working situation?
So first, I'll comment on the opportunity. You're right. It's an opportunity for us to expand our horizons and where we look, but it's also the inverse. It's an opportunity for others who might have never considered Catena Media as a place to work because they weren't in Malta, or they didn't want to be in Malta or London or where places we had offices. So it opens up the talent pool from both directions. More people looking at the opportunity for Catena Media, and Catena Media able to look at more people who specifically fit our needs. So there's those two sides of that. The biggest challenge is, I think, in the days ahead, as we go into this remote hybrid. We've been mostly remote for the last year because of office restrictions around the world. So when you have that, everyone is doing the same thing and everybody's remote, and there is no grass is greener on the other side sort of scenario that can often come from my experience in being hybrid remote organizations outside of Catena. So here we're going to go through that phase now where we get used to some people are going to be remote sometimes, and then they're going to be in the office, and some are going to be in the office full time. And it's finding the people who work within that environment well, but yet are not envious of the other side and understand that we're all getting something slightly different in our experience, but it's all the experience we want to get. So I think that's the thing that comes ahead for us. And Fiona, probably the best in HR I've ever worked with, no offense to those others.
Same here.
But Fiona spent a lot of time on this whole idea and concept, even before COVID came, with her team. And how does remote working happen? Because we already recognized that Malta was going to be limiting for finding enough talent for the size and the places we wanted to grow. So whether it was more offices around the world or remote, we needed to start to expand. How did we work as a more global organization? So we're already down that road, and now is the next chapter, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'm sorry to slide a bit off topic here, but I have to ask you something as well. When I was looking at your background a bit, I saw that you have experience as in the U.S. Navy. And I wanted to ask you, how does it help you to navigate the Catena ship as a former U.S. Navy?
So it helps on a couple of levels. So the Navy was very good for me. The Navy paid for my college at MIT. I became a naval officer after that. I ended up working in both surface ships and the larger ships. And then I went into the special warfare units and worked with very small organizations in that realm. So that taught me many things. And in a large organization that you have to, in a large ship, for example, you have to plan your turns well in advance because ships don't turn on a dime. You have to have the strategy of where you're going and what the markets are you're going to be in and how to bring the entire organization along for the plan. The smaller group operations taught tactics and reliance on individuals. You're too small of an organization, which Catena Media is really not a big company, the grand scheme of things, but everyone has to have a specialty and everyone needs to be relied on for that specialty. You need to listen to them so that you can't just say, oh, there is nobody who's a cog in the wheel in a special operations group, nor should there be in any organization. And I think that's what I learned from that. It also probably taught me to mature a bit. Decisions are best made when you have them presented to you rather than delay. You know, why do later what you could do now? And that can be, in some cases, historically in my life, maybe those are life-saving decisions or life-changing decisions. In a company, they are still those things. They are impactful to our employees' lives, our investors' bottom lines, and all sorts of things. So it was very good for me in maturation into being ready to understand leadership. It's not like we see in many movies, you don't yell at people or any of that. You learn how to lead people, which is different from managing people. So I think it was very good for me and my development as a human being. Probably made me from a kid who might have been a little too smart for my own good into a true adult too. So
amazing. No, I'm sorry, I had to ask. I'm a big fan of Jacko Willink, so I'm not sure if you know of Jacko. He's an ex Navy SEAL and also one of my best friends was an ex-Swedish military who works for Betsson, and he was voted the best manager in Betsson, and he attributes that to his accolades in the military. So I think definitely there's something to be said there.
I don't know that the military is for everybody, but I am a believer that I love the fact that countries like Israel have mandatory service, and whether that be military or Peace Corps or something that is beyond the focus on ourselves. You know, our CFO was a volunteer for a long time with the Red Cross and doing sort of EMT type things where he'd go out on calls and the like. And that sort of service to others and being part of a bigger picture that's more than just about yourself, I think is a really important element of learning leadership and world responsibility. So I think those things definitely helped me. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that, Michael. Thank you. Going back again to the quarterly report here, a step back. Also, something I noticed in the report is the seemingly low margins in the sports book. It seems that if I remember correctly, you have 28% of your revenue derives from the sports book, but only 9% of the EBITDA is from the sports book. Why? How come that the margins are so low in sportsbook when it seemingly should be from CPA revenue with higher revenue?
So that margin definitely varies across the geographies. This has been a year for us to also, in particular in sport, which we almost cut too much, let's say, last year because there weren't sports going on, but the investment in sports in our teams, in the products, in the SEO, we underinvested. So we're amplifying that investment now that we're back. I would have liked to have been doing some of that 6 months ago rather than 3 months before the Euros started, because an affiliate needs to be ahead of that curve. We need to be there long before the event happens so that the operator gets the best return from the event. So we're investing heavily in our sports business now in order to right the ship now that, I won't say COVID is over, but we're in another phase of it where it looks like we're going to learn how to live within the environment with COVID and run sports. So there's definitely a heavier investment there. It is also always a tighter margin business. There is a lot more news and information you have to put out, data feeds, et cetera, to get the interest for the person to then make a sports bet. Casino is a lot tougher to talk about, honestly, in terms of the information that players want and how to make it interesting to them. But it is a much higher lifetime value as well. So the rewards for that effort are higher. So yes, so smaller margin in sport, but I would expect you'll see that margin come up over time as we we move towards the investment case being made and being done today instead of tomorrow. And tomorrow the revenues will follow that investment.
Right, right. Is there also something to be said about the margins from US traffic being more expensive than acquiring European traffic?
It's almost the opposite at this case, I would say, at this point. Right. The rates in the US are exceptionally high compared to the rest of the world on sport and casino. Many of the operators in an acquisition phase taking market share, regardless of bottom line at this point. So that means that they are, as they open up these markets, they're in heavy competition phase. And those that I would say, being biased, that are smarter, are working with affiliates from day one. So they are driving, they want to be on those top lists, and you know, supply and demand, we're maximizing in those markets. Europe is a much more mature market, so I think rates have been much more stable. And again, we are smaller in sport in Europe, and that's why we need to invest more to take more of that market share, I think, in order, because there's opportunity for us to grow that revenue. But we need to do some of that investment now, and thus that margin will remain low for a little while in sport while we amplify our sports, the size of our sports business.
Right, right, right. I understood. And you mentioned here as well, you know, they sell to acquire a customer as a casino player being a bit more difficult sell than to a sports betting player. You know, the story, how do you acquire those players? And it's something that leads into an interesting question, which is just the future of affiliation in general. You know, I know that Catena Media, you have committed yourself into an SEO strategy in the future, but what about other means of affiliation, like Twitch streaming is obviously becoming huge. You know, we checked today, me and Robin Eric Reed, one of our shareholders, and noticed that there's equal amount of streamers that are looking at casino at the moment on Twitch as there are people watching Fortnite, which is one of the biggest games in the world. And obviously that segment is just growing and growing. Some controversy, of course, now recently with Twitch limiting the streamers to do their own affiliation, but nonetheless, the segment is strong. Let's start on casino streaming in general. Is this something Catena Media is talking about internally to pivot into?
Not just talking about, we are doing. Since the time I joined Catena Media in the North American realm, we'd been running Twitch channels, we'd been running YouTube, we are working with influencers. All of them, I will say, with the exception of maybe YouTube influencers, have not proved massive revenue streams yet. But the whole point of a business like ours is we need to be on that cutting edge and helping determine how to make marketing work better for our operators, which means making it better for us. So we're exploring all of those and expanding those into Europe and other places. Again, I don't see in the near term we figured out the model, because again, as you say, Twitch changes its rules and what you can and can't do for marketing around that, you know. But I definitely know the power of Twitch. I'm outside of the gambling realm, I'm a gamer myself, and you know, I'm big on our esports business. But I'm not a Fortnite player because I just don't have time to be as good as the 19-year-olds. But
or 12-year-olds for that matter.
Yes, or younger. But it is a massively important platform in the future. The world is changing how they consume information and how they want to. We are moving more video than written content. We recognize that. We still see the vast majority of our business today coming from that older traditional media forms, but we need to be playing in all of them. And so that's part of that investment, again, that we're doing in sports and everywhere else, is being relevant to the audience that we need to attract. And so that means being more modern in many ways, or figuring out what is modern on Facebook and social media and, you know, everything from Twitch to the other name escapes me all of a sudden. Lots of things out there. So working on it. But yes, well, we're focused on organic is what I'd say, where we will limit ourselves, and we will, when there are opportunities to maximize the return, we will do things like performance marketing, which is paying for ads on Google is where, and the like. And that's where we tend to downplay that portion of our business. I don't want, those are very low margin businesses, and they are very highly competitive with the operators and everyone else. That's not the best place for an affiliate to play in my view, in our company's view. So organic means SEO, absolutely, first and foremost, and content with the SEO. And that content could be video or written or audio or whatnot.
Yeah, right. Because there is a bit of a sentiment I hear sometimes that SEO affiliation is a, I'm not going to say thing of the past, but there's a sentiment I hear that the future lies within influencer marketing and just creating great content. I guess that is more the key here, right? The Google algorithms are getting smarter, and the days where you could trick the Google algorithm is slowly changing, so to say. So is that something in your SEO marketing as well that you think a lot about, is just how to create engaging content? And, you know, in the casino part especially, there seems to be a more difficult to create a story of how to create engaging casino content than on the sports betting side, for example, which is much more straightforward, you know, bring high level sports news and whatnot it can be in order to engage the players. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, am I sentiment completely off here, or how do you guys see this?
I think you're on it. For my view, Google, the search engines, the world, the users are getting smarter about using the internet. The days of trickery and false networks and other such things, I think, are probably thankfully starting to come to a close. Yes, there are still those that use it. We've probably historically bought products that had some of those things in their back ends. We've moved away from that. Where our investment is, and this is an investment story, our investment is in content and SEO blended together. SEO doesn't mean doing SEO trickery and black hat things. What SEO means is understanding what are the keywords that are important to users when they search for online casino in Germany or in France or in New Jersey. So how then can we make sure that the content that we're writing is engaging for those keywords that they are interested in and answering the questions, so that we can then send them on the user journey that is personalized to send them from the point they start to what is the best operator, if they even reach that point of the journey, that is the best operator for what their need was that they started out looking for. That's also the beauty about being organic, is the users are coming to us with questions. So our job is to help answer those questions. Casino is more difficult, yes, than sport in terms of having good content or content. It's just as hard to have good content in sport. There's a lot of sport content out there. Sport affiliation and sport betting news is a different subset of sports news. So finding people who are really good about talking about sports betting and operators and how they compare to each other, that's the niche we go into in affiliation. And so it's getting it so that we can find the keywords that mean we're driving the right people to our pages, or finding the right people or finding the right pages regarding that type of search, or helping educate others on what it means sports betting versus sports following, etc. So that's the journey we're on, is investing in good product, not trying to trick Google anymore. It's trying to work with the Googles and the Bings and everything else out there in search engines, Facebook, YouTube, figuring out what do they view in their algorithms as good content and producing good content. And also then, ideally, they're just a reflection of what end users think is good content, because that's really our end goal, yeah, is to have good content that the end user says is good content.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. There's a joke in the digital marketing world that SEO is dead, and it's been, you know, every month there is an article, SEO is dead. But it seems like SEO will live another day still, and I'll be one of those that give this sentiment and will have to eat my words, obviously. I have. Let's see. I think a final question here. A final two questions, actually. On the quarterly report as well, you mentioned now that the cash at hand is around 30 million within Catena at the moment. How the present, obviously, it doesn't seem like you have enough cash at hand to do any larger acquisitions at the moment, perhaps. And also, you have announced that you will do the buyback of shares, of course. How does this seemingly fairly low cash at hand affect your M&A plans and also the buyback program?
As of now, it hasn't affected our any M&A strategy. Deals can be structured in different ways. The cash on hand means the cash you need to have to do a closing transaction. Many transactions like we did with the lineups are paid over a period of time. So over 2 years or the like. And so that means what does your cash flow look like is just as important what says your cash at hand. We have a very strong cash flow position. We are in a position where we expect that to only be continue to be healthy in for the foreseeable future. So I believe we still have a very healthy set in our toolbox if we want to do M&A, if we find the right strategic ads for this organization. At the same time, warrants, shares, buybacks of those are another tool we've added to the toolbox with approval by the EGM and AGM. And our board has given a directive that they want us to explore that for the second half of this year. Again, does that have to get balanced on with what we do for M&A? Yes, but again, I don't feel like we are limited at this point. The bigger challenge for me is finding M&A opportunity that makes sense, not just buying something for the sake of the revenues it's making today, but what does its trajectory look like? What is the market is in? Why is Catena, what can it add to the Catena portfolio that we might not do organically in the same amount of time that the payback would take on something like this?
Okay, brilliant. And the buyback program, is there any details of when this is going to be activated? I'm sure you heard this question 100 times today, by the way.
That sounds like a familiar question. All I'll say is what we've announced is that we're going to look through it in the autumn period. And, you know, there are factors on how our Q2 is received in the market to the quiet periods we have to go through prior to the Q3 report that will impact some of that timing. But we've made no specific announcements except for what is regulatory and required by the various entities that regulate us. You know, I don't know that we'd want to very specifically say the day we're going to buy back, because that doesn't seem like that's the best way to buy back stock.
Fair enough. It had to be asked. I'm sorry about that. Last question for you here, Michael, as well. Something that interests me greatly is the crypto and blockchain world, which is just absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's just blowing up now on the NFT side with digital art and DeFi, and it's just changing the world seemingly. Also, crypto affiliation is a huge market as well. Is this something that you guys are talking about in Catena Media to try to penetrate this market? What's your views on crypto and so on?
All right. So my view on crypto is a technology, and it is a relatively safe technology for many of the ways it's now being employed in currency as well as in many other technological realms. We have operators today that work with us who are operators using crypto for payment methods for their casino businesses, say. So we do affiliation for operators that have crypto casinos, as you might call them. We do affiliation. It doesn't mean we get paid in cryptocurrency, or it doesn't mean we don't. But we have that today within the portfolio. It's very small, but it's out there. And we do the same vetting of those operators and their setup as we do for other operators who are working with other currencies, whether it be U.S. currencies or euros, etc. So we have that. And then you have our financial trading group, which is works with those who are interested in trading in crypto. We're not trading crypto, but we are doing affiliation for crypto companies that are trading crypto or doing financial trading with cryptocurrency included, I should say.
Right.
But the whole crypto realm, you know, from a personal perspective, I think it's here to stay. You know, I hear every now and then, sort of like you hear SEO is dead, I hear crypto is a fad. I don't know that I believe that. I absolutely inherently don't believe that. I think it's a very interesting affiliation space. It's starting to blossom. Our job as Catena Media executives and with our board is to figure out how much, with all those opportunities you mentioned before, how do you focus in on what you're going to do now and next? So our job and the things we debate constantly are, How much do we spend on the iGaming and the financial trading realm that we're in today? What does diversification look like? Where would we go with our expertise? What could we leverage? What else is out there? What does the landscape look like for those markets today and for the next 5 years? What's the ESG impact of working in those other diversified industries? What's the banking impact for us? Because we have to have a bank to deposit into. And if we're working in something that is too risky for a bank, even if it's not too risky for us, that's probably too risky. So there's a number of elements. I think it's a very interesting space. I watch it a lot. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's the crypto exchanges are investing in massive amount of money right now to open accounts from customers. I don't know if you're following the UFC, for example, but the crypto.com set this 100 million euro plus partnership with the UFC. There's Formula One who set this partnership as well. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, seems to be a very interesting space in general to look at. Final thing for today, Michael. Thank you so much for doing this, by the way, with me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I must share with you a comment that was really funny that I saw today, because I'm following very much the retail investor-based chat rooms. There's on Discord, the Swedish groups at Catena Media. They are active. I don't know if you are aware of this, but there is a Discord chat with like thousands of retail investors that are daily discussing the movements winning Catena.
I'm aware of it. I can't follow a lot of it as my Swedish is poor, but I am aware of it, and I know we do pay attention. Again, we don't participate in those. We'll never comment in those, but it's interesting to see the expectations and the views out there. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I by the way, that is very fascinating in its own right, because it becomes a little bit of a community. You know, everyone laughs together when the share goes up, and everyone cries together when it goes down, you know, and it becomes a nice thing. It's a little bit of a community there. But I saw a really funny comment today. There was someone dubbing you, Michael, as the Captain America of the gaming industry. And I just want to hear your comment on this as a final remark today.
Well, I am very much flattered by the compliment. I'm pretty sure I can't live up to Captain America's shoes, being a fan of that that Marvel chain of movies, at least. So yes, very flattered, but I think there are many strong Americans in the space, in addition to many strong Europeans, et cetera. And I am just the figurehead on a very large ship that is Catena Media. So it's more than by far just me.
Absolutely. I thought it was an awesome comment. But thank you so much, Michael, for today. Is there any closing remarks from your end?
No, I just very much appreciate your taking the time to talk to us and myself at Catena Media. This is a very important thing for us, is to have transparency and visibility with the investment community where we can, to help everyone understand the journey we're on and try to make sense of it, because it is a big global picture that has, unless you're spending every day, every hour in it, it can be very murky. And that's our job. So as the more we can help explain that to the world that follows Catena Media, that we appreciate that.
Brilliant. It's been great to get to know you a little bit better during this call, Michael. And thank you again for giving me the time, and to the listeners. Thank you to you guys as well. And hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Pierre.
Thank you.